Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting at republicbroadcasting.org. Today is Wednesday, August 30th, 2023. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Beyond the Official Narrative. And I'm pleased to announce I have a very special guest joining us today, folks. I have with us Mr. Don Advo. Don, hey, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Richard. Greetings from behind the lines in Mexican-occupied California. Nice to be on your show.
Yes, yes, nice to have you here, sir. I'm honored. And for those of my listeners who are not aware, Don Advo has been a frequent guest on the Stormfront broadcasts of Mr. Don Black, another man I highly admire. And I actually, I don't know how often you managed to tune in days you didn't join them, Don, but well, let's see, last year, for about 6 months there, I was on Wednesdays with them. Patrick started bringing me on, I guess it was December of 21 through April of last year, 22 there. I was on, every Wednesday pretty much. So I got to know what good guys, frankly, you gentlemen are. I mean, a few times I hung around on a Skype discussion after the show ended even. And, yeah, it's definitely a very warm atmosphere you gentlemen have. And certainly for our cause, we need people like you, good men, who can be role models for, I mean, I'm Generation X. I was born in 76. And so I'm trying to, prepare to start carrying the torch, sir. And I mean, it's everything's so anti-white in Bolshevik occupied America, to paraphrase a variation of what you opened with there. Right. And that's why I like everything you focus on, sir. I mean, for those who aren't aware, Don Advo has been a California lawyer, attorney. I know you're retired now, sir, and you have great insights, especially into a lot of these landmark cases, which were clearly anti-white. I mean, I was looking over just all of the notable ones, post maybe like, Reconstruction Act or something. And certainly the first most notable one is the one you have the most expertise in, I'd say, of anyone out there. Because, I mean, well, later we had, of course, in the 60s, 1964 and 1965 had a lot of laws that ultimately were anti-white as well, for that matter. I mean, I could see in future shows, maybe us covering some of those likewise, like 1964 Civil Rights Act, 1965 Immigration and Nationality Act, 1965 Voting Rights Act. But this in particular, I mean, before any of that, is foremost, sir, the 1954 Board of Education versus Brown case. So I'll hand the mic over to you, sir.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. Actually, you said I was a guest on the Stormfront Radio. Actually, I was a co-host beginning in 2014 and until just a few years ago. I actually had a more of a role in that show. And I did it for many, many years. It was one of the more interesting experiences of my life, a very challenging experience. And it was wonderful to be able to talk to like-minded people, intelligent people, and to have an intelligent audience who really enjoyed things. And apart from that, it was a great voyage of discovery. I looked into things very differently than I had ever looked at them before. Looked at history. Became aware of the war on white people, became aware of white genocide actually very recently in my life, by way of a slight digression here. Up until fairly recently, I was...
I'm sorry, sir, we're getting a little bit of background noise. I don't know if it's just some sort of wind or... But I don't know if there's anything you could do to adjust, but I don't mean to interrupt. Please.
No wind. I'm sitting in my office.
Maybe you're a little too close to the mic, just slightly, and your breath is...
Okay.
All right.
don't have that much control over that, but I have one of those headphone things where the mic sticks out. Is that better?
Yes, sir. That sounds actually better now. Yes,
oh,
sir.
Good. I was, for most of my life, a colorblind conservative, the operative word being blind. And it was not until I stopped being blind and started looking around that I realized white people were disappearing from the metropolitan Los Angeles area. Seemed like white people were almost kind of like an endangered species. And the study of basically white genocide, white dispossession, white relegation to second-class status is a very complicated study. It's a campaign, it's a war of extermination against our people that has been waged very openly, but very subtly and very deceptively. It's almost like an invisible hand operating behind the scenes. You can only see the people in front of you, but not the invisible hand behind it. And instead of being openly, you know, carried out in the form and described as what it is, I mean, even slavery, as odious as slavery has always been through many thousands of years of human history, they always called it what it was. It was, you know, slavery. The slave owners in the Western Hemisphere called it slavery, chattel slavery, and that was what it was. And then in 1865, slavery in the United States came abruptly to an end. The 13th Amendment was passed in 1865, and a number of civil rights laws were passed, and there was this huge struggle between alien opposing races who had irreconcilable conflicts of interest. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Black people were brought here against their will in bondage, and it was a great injustice. The Atlantic slave trade was a great injustice. All slave trades are great injustices. But slavery has been part of the human condition for as long as the human condition has existed. And the role of white people was not that they invented slavery. The role of white people is that white people abolished slavery. It was the historic mission of white people that white people ended slavery. I was at a secondhand bookstore a couple of days ago, and I found a book by a Jewish historian named Adam Hochschild called "Bury the Chains: Prophets and Rebels in the Fight to Free an Empire's Slaves." Now, this guy wrote a history called "King Leopold's Ghost" about the administration of the Congo by King Leopold of Belgium, and then later the Belgium administration of the Congo. And this is a Jewish historian, you know, very hostile to white people and European people, certainly not prejudiced in our favor. And this is the back jacket of this book, "Bury the Chains." This is what it says. It says, from the author of the widely acclaimed King Leopold's Ghost comes the taut, gripping account of one of the most brilliantly organized social justice campaigns in history, the fight to free slaves of the British Empire. In early 1787, 12 men came together in a London printing shop and began the world's first grassroots movement battling for the rights of people on another continent. Okay, the significance, even this Jewish historian who is hostile to white people acknowledges that white people came together in 1787 in the world's first grassroots movement to end the institution of slavery. In the history of the world, no other civilization came to grips with slavery in the way that white people did in the 18th century. The Chinese were not active in ending slavery. Neither were the Muslims, who were the driving force behind the African slave trade for many, many years. The Atlantic slave trade didn't even begin until early in the 16th century. But the Islamic slave trade in Africa actually began in the 700s, the 8th century. centuries before white men ever went to Africa, Muslims, members of the Religion of Peace, were taking Africans and exporting them around the world to India and even in the Middle East. So slavery is an old institution, and conflicts among races, diversity has never been a strength. It's always been a weakness. Different people with different races and different backgrounds and cultural heritages and religions have always been at each other's throat, and it's always involved a competition on who will rule over the others and how will the differences between competing races be adjusted. Well, in the United States, slavery was ended in 1865 by the 13th Amendment. And then in 1954, and this is the historical significance of the Brown decision, in 1954, the United States Supreme Court, and probably the most evil, despicable decision ever issued by that court, in just 90 years after the Civil War, formally ended slavery. The United States Supreme Court issued Brown versus the Board of Education, which created a brand new legally enforceable possessory interest. A legally enforceable possessory interest, not in houses, not in apartments, not in repossessed cars, but a legally enforceable possessory interest in human beings, in white children. The significance of the Brown decision is not that it granted equal education or equal rights or civil rights. The significance of the Brown decision is that it vested black children with a legally enforceable possessory interest in the compelled physical presence of captive white children to force captive unwilling white children into racially integrated classrooms with blacks. Now, when blacks were forcibly integrated into white society under the slave trade, this was considered to be a great injustice. But now, when whites are forcibly forced into schools with black children, this is considered to be civil rights and equality. This shows you how the deceptive and dishonest use of language can be used to lull people into a form of torpor, a form of sleep, even though their children are being enslaved. Why do I say this? You can read the Brown decision, get it on the internet. It's you don't even have to go to the law library like we used to have to do in old days. It's actually a fairly short decision, about 4,000 words. The citation is 347 U.S. 483. And you can read that and read the whole thing, but the really important part of the Brown decision is at page 493 of that opinion. It's a single sentence, which, I read this and I studied the Brown decision in law school on constitutional law. Everybody does. And I kind of blew through it. And the most obvious glaring part of it completely went right by me. I didn't see it. It's like it was right there in front of me, and I didn't see it. And then I read a book by a black civil rights lawyer named Charles J. Ogletree called All Deliberate Speed. And he talked about the Brown decision and cases that came after that decision. And he quoted the Brown decision, and suddenly that book hit me like a thunderclap. It gave me the insight and the moral and the intellectual clarity to see what was right in front of me in law school and what was right in front of every other law student, but that to which we were absolutely blinded. And that is a legally enforceable interest in human beings. Say that again, a legally enforceable possessory interest. Legally enforceable possessory interest. If you don't get anything else out of this broadcast today, those words are of critical importance. You need to write them down and memorize them so you can say them smoothly and seamlessly, because that's the way that leads to understanding. Page 493 of the Brown decision says, the following. Of course, the history of Brown is a lawsuit was filed because prior to Brown, it was permissible for states and school districts to have racially segregated schools. You could have schools for black children and schools for white children. Under the doctrine of separate but equal, it was okay to do that as long as the black schools were equal. And this was pursuant to a United States Supreme Court case decided in 1896 called Plessy versus Ferguson. And Plessy versus Ferguson had nothing to do with school or students or children. Plessy versus Ferguson dealt with railroads and whether there was a statute in Louisiana which said railroads had to serve everybody, but blacks and whites had to be in separate railroad coaches. And this wasn't good enough for the black people, so one of them bought a ticket and tried to sit in the white section, and he was charged with a crime, and he filed a lawsuit, and ultimately it got to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said separate but equal is okay. It doesn't violate the equal protection of the law part of the 14th Amendment if accommodations are separate. Now, understand, this is a commerce case. This is a case between contracting parties. You buy a ticket from somebody, there's a contractual relationship between adults and a railroad, between parties that have contractual capability. The case, contractual capacity, the case is a contract case, it's a commerce clause case. It has nothing to do with the custody of children who do not have the capacity to contract, and it has nothing to do with schools, public schools, whose relationship with children is not a contractual relationship. It is a statutory relationship. So right off the bat, Plessy was stretched to cover all public accommodations between black and white people, restaurants, stores, housing, public schools. And so eventually it was challenged, and it got up to the Supreme Court in 1954, a number of consolidated cases, and they brought under the 14th Amendment, which said denying black children the ability to get into white schools violated the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. And the court said that it did. Well, what does this have to do with slavery? What does this have to do with legally enforceable possessory interests in people? You know, 100 years after the Civil War ended? Well, the clue to this, which was overlooked by me and by just about everybody else I've ever talked to, every other lawyer, including many conservative lawyers, is as follows, is set forth on page 493 of the Brown decision. And that summarizes the Brown case in two sentences, as follows. The court says as follows, we come to the question presented. Does segregation of children in public schools solely on the basis of race, even though the physical facilities and other tangible factors may be equal, deprive the children of the minority group of equal educational opportunities? We believe that it does. Okay?
I hear the break music, sir. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
Terrific.
Excellent. Stick around,
great,
folks.
Great place to break.
We'll be right back. It's no social integrator.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau d'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com. or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Syrah grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
And we are back, folks, beyond the official narrative here on Republic Broadcasting. Richard Carey with my very special guest today, Mr. Don Advo. And yes, a co-host from the Stormfront broadcasts. I actually, Don, didn't start listening regularly, that is, until just after Charlottesville, to be frank, to Don's broadcasts. And I don't know, it got me curious to hear, you know, more pro-white points of view on a lot of things, including what happened there. So I just heard a few prior to that, in the years prior to that. So I didn't realize, or perhaps remember since then, that you, yes, you had been for quite a number of years prior to that, a co-host daily with Stormfront.
Yep, I was. And then they moved it from 7 o'clock in the morning, my time, to 6 o'clock in the morning, and that made it kind of tough. And then I had some health problems, so I gradually phased out of Stormfront. But it's nice to be honored to be a guest on your show. And as I understand it, we have much in common. Many of the same friends, Dr. David Duke and Don Black and Patrick Slattery and probably many others. So.
Oh yes, sir. Yeah, I've had Jay Hess on my show three times this year.
Yeah, I know.
And he actually brought Don Black on with him the most recent time. It was couple months ago. Yeah. But, I mean, Jay and I have had quite a few off-air phone conversations. He's a really, really great guy. And he's perhaps the one I've become closest to so far, frankly. But
Jay is a great guy. I know him very well. He was a co-host for quite a while with us on Stormfront Radio.
And, we would certainly look forward to any updates if Don decides to resume broadcasts. And well, getting back to this case,
I found, of course, a good reference at archives.gov for the Brown versus Board of Education 1954 case. You also recommended that Wikipedia actually does rather good coverage of it. And
yes.
I noticed a section with some key quotes and commentary, even talking about just the emotional factor it gets into, which is interesting if you're going to go into that. But actually, there's a little paragraph before the quote you just mentioned before the break. I thought maybe I'd share with the listeners. During the segregation era, it was common for black schools to have fewer resources and poorer facilities than white schools, despite the equality required by the separate but equal doctrine. The Brown Court did not address this issue, however, probably because some of the school districts involved in the case had made improvements to their black schools to equalize them with the quality of the white schools. This prevented the court from finding a violation of the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause and measurable inequalities between all white and black schools, and instead required it to look to the effects of segregation itself. Thus, the court framed the case around the more general question of whether the principle of separate but equal was constitutional when applied to public education. And of course, the quote you mentioned right before the break, we come then to the question presented, does segregation of children in public schools solely on the basis of race, even though the physical facilities and other tangible factors may be equal, deprive the children of the minority group of equal educational opportunities? Brown, 397, U.S. at 493.
Correct.
Yes, sir.
Correct. Well, yeah, let me... I don't find that quote you just made in my copy of Brown, but it's not that, and it's really, really not significant. The significant thing is the sentence that I quoted. We come to the question presented, does segregation of children in public schools solely on the basis of race, even though physical facilities and other tangible factors may be equal, deprive the children of the minority group of equal educational opportunities? We believe it does. Now, what you need to do is download that quote, print it out, and read it, and think about it. What does this mean? What does it say? Okay. The violation of the constitutional right is not an unequal education, is not an inferior education, it's not a substandard education. The violation of the constitutional right of the black child is when the white child runs away. Okay? Does segregation of children in public schools based solely on race deprive the children of the minority group of an equal educational opportunity? Okay, what is the opportunity that is deprived of black children when white children run away?
It's really hard to fathom.
What is the opportunity that is taken away from black children when white children run away?
Yeah,
white flight.
I can't imagine anything that's truly concrete. I mean, this seems like...
What is the okay, what is taken away from black children when white children run away from black... from integrated schools?
Everyone out here in my listenership should ask that question. I hear we have the bottom of the hour break already, sir.
Okay.
Long segment coming up. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
One day we will put it all behind. We'll say that was just another time. We'll say that was just another day on earth. We'll say that was just another time. One day.
We are back with Just Another Day on Earth, folks, here at Republic Broadcasting Network. Richard Carey with my special guest today, Don Advo of Stormfront. And another friend we have in common, of course, Don, is Jeremy from Kentucky. Jeremy and I have become rather close around here. I mean, and of course, Patrick has his broadcast just after mine here weekdays.
Oh, really?
Cool. Yes, sir. Yeah, yeah, and he does two shows a week with Jeremy, Jeremy's Tuesday evening show and Patrick's show on Wednesdays here. So they have that coming up next. Actually, Jeremy will be on for the next hour.
Oh, and, cool.
And then, of course, Jeremy, he started as a host right around the time I did, about 3 years ago on RBN. So, yeah, we've become close since then. He has an evening broadcast weekdays. And in this... well, case here, I mean, I notice quite a few interesting points that follow that. What I read before the quote was just Wikipedia editors authoring.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. But after they mentioned the quote you stressed, it mentions in the Wikipedia, in answer, the court held that it did. As far as the question of does segregation of children in public schools solely on the basis of race, even though the physical facilities and other tangible factors may be equal, deprive the children of the minority group of equal educational opportunities. And so, yes, in answer, the court held that it did. It ruled the state-mandated segregation, they say, even if implemented in schools of otherwise equal quality, is inherently unequal because of its psychological impact. And then it has another quote from the case, sir.
Yeah, there was a lot of psychological mumbo-jumbo in there. I mean, if white children run away from black children, it hurts them psychologically. which is, you know, ridiculous. I guess when the slaves ran away from the slave owner, it probably hurt him psychologically because he lost an economic opportunity. But my question to you is, when the purpose of the Brown decision was to stop white children from running away from black children, okay, just like the purpose of the fugitive slave laws, the purpose of slavery was to stop black people from running away from white people, okay? They wanted to keep possession of slaves because they wanted them to pick their cotton and hoe their tobacco and plow the fields and do what slaves did. And we know what was the benefit that was lost when the slave ran away. He lost the economic opportunity to achieve the product of the labor of the slave. Okay, what is it that the black child loses when the white child runs away? What is the educational opportunity that the black child loses when the white child runs away modernly?
This is Hello? Just all perception. It seems it's all based on perception and self-esteem or something they're trying
to pitch to us. Well, it's all psychological mumbo-jumbo. Yeah. The point is, the Brown decision says squarely and forthrightly, when white children run away from black children, this deprives the children of the minority group of equal educational opportunities. It is the presence of the white child that is the opportunity. Notice the separation of children based on race doesn't deprive the white child of anything. It is only the minority child who was deprived of an educational opportunity. So we are told. So what's the remedy? Well, under the fugitive slave laws, under slavery, the remedy was to chase down the slave. And under the fugitive slave laws, secure his return. Well, what's the difference between runaway black slaves in under slavery and runaway white people under the civil rights regime of the 20th and the 21st century? What's the difference? How were runaway white people treated differently from runaway black people 200 years ago? Hello?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it in perspective.
Okay, I'll tell you what the difference is. 200 years ago, runaway black people were chased down by men on horseback and bloodhounds. Today, runaway white people are chased down not by men on horseback and bloodhounds, but are chased down by Jewish civil rights lawyers. That is the meaning of the Brown decision. The Brown decision is the reinstitution of slavery of white people. It is the substitution of Jewish civil rights lawyers for men on horseback and bloodhounds. That's the only difference. Is that clear?
Yes, yeah,
I agree. The Brown decision doesn't say blacks have a right to a good education or an equal education or any other kind of education. It says black children are vested with a property right, a legally enforceable possessory interest in the compelled physical presence of captive white children. They have a right to force white children into the classroom with them. It is not an individual right. Under slavery, all white people did not own black people. Slavery was an individual right. Individual whites owned slaves. This is, you know, an individual black person doesn't have a right to your individual white daughter, although a lot of them act as though they do. But it is a group right. It is a group right of white children to the compelled physical possession of unwilling white children. This is a legally enforceable interest in human beings, a possessory interest in human beings. Is that clear?
It's clear to me, sir.
Okay, well, it hasn't been clear to the legal profession for 70 years. It hasn't been clear to anybody else I've ever discussed this issue with for the last 70 years. You know, I've discussed this issue many times on many different shows. And the interesting thing about it is lay white people get it. They understand when I explain this and I read this one sentence out of Brown. Brown gave blacks a right to the possession of white people, of white children. But, you know, I've been on shows with conservative white lawyers, and they don't get it. They don't get it, which seems so weird to me. And one of them on a very well-known pro-white radio show, a very bright guy, very bright lawyer, he said he was obviously struggling with the concept of it. He didn't get it. He said, you know, the Brown decision is a bad decision because there was corruption and it overturned the Plessy case and stare decisis and a whole bunch of stuff. And he said, well, I judged the Brown case by its fruits, and the fruits has been bad educational outcomes. And I said, well, that's very interesting. You oppose the enslavement of white children because it produces bad educational outcomes. Does that mean that you would support the enslavement of white children if it produced good educational outcomes? This is like saying, yeah, well, I support slavery because it produces good economic outcomes. People got rich off slave labor. That's make slavery right?
It's exactly the same thing. Yes, sir.
Okay. There's something I want to discuss. This is part of my analysis of Brown. Before the Brown decision, public education required the state to provide buildings and teachers. Okay? After Brown, public education required the state to provide something else. It required the state to provide an inventory of white children as well. An inventory of white children. Is that clear?
Yeah, the commodities, property.
All right. The building contractors and the teachers were paid for their work on behalf of the state. White children who were transformed under the Brown decision from merely being students into instruments of the public school system were paid nothing for their contribution to the education of blacks. Likewise, they were not compensated for the substandard education forced upon them and the constant threat of racially motivated violence against them by blacks. The state had property rights in the facilities and in the contracts with the teachers and other employees. The Brown decision gave the state a property right in the physical persons of white children, but without vesting any mutual rights in those white children. Forced racial integration has many of the legal attributes of slavery. The personal preferences of legally superior slave owners with respect to their property rights and their inventory of slaves were given the force of law, but the personal preferences of the slaves were deemed null and void. Okay, is that clear?
It really now, isn't. Go ahead, sir.
I'm sorry?
Yes, it is. Go ahead, sir. I was going to say something else. But...
Just as under slavery, there's always been resistance to slavery. We've all seen, you know, the Ten Commandments, where the Hebrew slaves were liberated from the Egyptians. And we've all seen the movie Spartacus, whereby the Roman gladiator slave leads a slave rebellion against the Romans. And then, of course, in the 9th century AD in the Middle East, there was the Zanzibar Rebellion, where hundreds of thousands of black slaves imported into the Middle East rose up against their Muslim overlords and actually achieved their freedom. That's 1,000 years before our Civil War. 1,000 years before our Civil War, hundreds of thousands of black slaves were fighting against Islam, the religion of peace, to secure their freedom. But we talk about the inventory of captive white children necessary to make the Brown decision work. There was resistance to the Brown decision. And one of those forms of resistance was something called white flight. Just as black slaves resisted slavery by running away from white people, so did white people resist black domination by running away from these school districts. And this created a huge problem. When you read the cases that came in the aftermath of Brown versus the Board of Education, the problem becomes all these white people are running away and we don't have enough white children to go around. There was a case in 1974 called Milliken versus Bradley. Basically, the city of Detroit wanted to consolidate its school district with 53 surrounding school districts in the suburbs because so many white people had fled from Detroit, there weren't enough white children left. The Wikipedia entry for this Milliken versus Bradley says the Supreme Court's decision, ultimately the Supreme Court said you can't do that. You cannot, you know, incorporate all these suburban areas and enforce them because they never had segregation. And enforced integration is remedial. And there's no evidence that any of these suburbs ever engaged in forced racial integration. And this is what Wikipedia says about the Milliken decision. And it says the Supreme Court's decision required the City of Detroit School District to redistribute, get the use of that word, redistribute the relatively small number of white students more widely across the district. This is talking about white children as though they were school supplies. You know, we're like, oh, you know, we're running low on paper and pencils, so we have to ration them and redistribute them. This is the transformation of white children into property, into farm animals, who can be redistributed. And that's that is the whole shabby secret, this whole disgusting facade. The purpose of the civil rights movement is not to achieve equal rights. It is to relegate white people to a subordinate status of second-class citizenship and the redistribution of white wealth under a number of guises. White children are coveted by blacks because white children are a form of white wealth to be redistributed and passed around for the pleasure and the benefit of white people. And this entry from Wikipedia, and I read the Milliken decision. It's 35 pages. It's a huge headache in law reviews, but that's exactly what happened. They ran out of white children to distribute them, and so they had to use to integrate, and they had to pass it around. They had to redistribute the small number of white students more widely across the district. This is a disgrace. This is a goddamn disgrace. And you read these decisions, and the thing that is so astonishing to me is that the answer was always right there in front of me and other lawyers. And I don't know why people didn't see it. I've never heard the argument made that the evil of the Brown decision is it creates a legally enforceable possessory right in human beings, namely white children. Does that make sense?
It doesn't make sense, and it's completely unjust. Even if... I mean, I can't help but think about the elephant in the living room no one is going to dare mention. Even if there were some sort of benefit to black children, you cannot hold white children captive as property and distribute them around in a more spread out way in a state.
They're not
like
property.
School supplies.
Maybe it's a benefit to me to go out on a date with your teenage daughter, even though she doesn't like creepy old men, you know.
And
does
the
that
elephant,
mean I have a civil rights lawsuit against your daughter if she doesn't want to go out on a date with me?
And the elephant in the living room no one's talking about, of course, is all the data going back centuries, well over a century and a half at least. I mean, Dr. Duke's My Awakening has so many excellent references to studies of average IQ with regard to race and how the brain wiring in so many fundamental ways is different. It does even affect our ability to have high trust societies in the Western world, in white European Western culture and nations traditionally. And so, I mean, if being around someone of an average higher IQ and just watching them and studying them, if that supposedly is some sort of a benefit, that's no right to treat them like school supplies, property.
There is no possessory right in people, regardless of what is the benefits.
And I want to hear...
That's just nonsense.
Sir, I'd like to hear your feedback to this one other part, that one more from the Brown with a response in Wikipedia. To separate black children from others of similar age and qualifications solely because of their race generates a feeling of inferiority as to their status in the community that may affect their hearts and minds in a way unlikely to be ever undone. Brown, 347 U.S. at page 494.
Please. When black slaves ran away from the white master and they lost the value of their labor, that hurt their feelings and they had psychological damage too.
Exactly.
I don't care about their feelings, and I don't care about the psychological damage. You know, Betty Lou, the blonde cheerleader, wouldn't go out on a date with me because I was a dork in high school who wore glasses. I don't have a civil rights lawsuit and a right to force Betty Lou to go out on a date with me. People are not property.
And then the liberal editors of Wikipedia add this after it. The court supported their conclusion with citations in a footnote, not the main text of the opinion, to several psychological studies purporting to show that segregating black children made them feel inferior and interfered with their learning. These studies included those of Kenneth and Mamie Clark, whose experiments in the 1940s had suggested that black American children from segregated environments preferred white dolls over black dolls. I don't know. I think our white society and our white countries might be better today if black children preferred white dolls to black dolls. Perhaps it's just a thought. I mean, if they're in their country, maybe that should be different. But, I mean, if you're in someone else's land and with their traditions, their laws, standards morality and just basing the whole freedom of high trust society, it has a lot to do with
If you're going to support the possession of human beings, the possession of white children by black children because it gives a good educational outcome, then what is the moral basis to challenge the possession of blacks by white plantation owners because it gives a good economic outcome? The issue isn't whether it benefits the oppressing party. The issue is the freedom of an oppressed person. Now, in 1968, the Supreme Court decided a case called Green versus County School Board of New Kent County. And this was a county in, it was in Virginia, okay? And then they had a school district. They had two high schools formerly segregated, and prior to 1968, they threw them open and said, everybody can go to school where they want to go to school. Just go where you want to go. Pure freedom of choice. And this went up to the United States Supreme Court on the grounds that it violated the Brown decision. And they said, yes, it did violate Brown. It says the transition to a unitary non-racial system of public education was and is the ultimate end to be brought about under Brown. The personal preferences and the personal choices of children, whether black or white, has absolutely no relevance to the issue. As one of the judges so contemptuously stated, freedom of choice is not a sacred talisman. It is only a means to a constitutional required end. So this specifically said freedom of choice is not enough. Even if people want voluntarily to segregate, the social engineering goals set forth in Brown are far more important, and they prevail over the freedom of choice. Now, the problems that came about in the aftermath of Brown over the decades have not so much been educational as how do we deal with these runaway white people. And there's an interesting case that the Lindmark case, Lindmark versus Township of Willingboro. This is a case that doesn't have anything to do with schools or children. Doesn't even mention the Brown decision. In this county, they passed a law banning the use of for sale signs and sold signs because it accelerated white flight. It made white people move out in greater numbers. Thurgood Marshall, that white hating America hating black on the Supreme Court, one of the lawyers in Brown, wrote the opinion in this case, and he said they decided the case on a free speech basis. They said it violates the First Amendment free speech. Nobody said anything about the evil of racially profiling white people and trying to control the choices of white people freely to determine where they live and whether or not they have a right to sell their property. This is the relegation, not of white children per se, but of white people to the level of farm animals who can be managed and manipulated and racially targeted. So that's the significance of the social engineering, and Brown is but one element of that, a particularly odious element, because it reintroduces the possessory interest in human beings, white children, and because they've gotten away with it so long, notwithstanding that it was right out there in plain sight. So I think we're running out of time, and that's as far as I'm going to go today.
Fantastic. No, that's was excellent, sir. I don't know if we have time for maybe a couple quick comments from a couple callers in the queue, sir.
Sure. Put them on.
Charles in Florida. Charles.
Yeah, Richard and our guest. Don Adbo, I'm sorry. I used to listen to him all the time when they had the program on with Dave Duke and Slattery.
We're kind of short on time, Charles, if you could make your point.
I know. I was going to point out about 1936, the Olympics under National Socialism and Adolf Hitler, the people there and the American competitors, they wanted to racially be segregated, but the German government forbade. They didn't understand racial segregation, so they integrated them. That was the first time that I am aware of the racial integration of America and America's athletes at the German Olympics in 1936. Nowadays, in the California school, they want to resegregate things, brown, black, and certain minorities like LGBT plus and et cetera have to be segregated from whites now, according to an article in the truthseeker.co.uk. Okay. That's all I wanted to say.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Murr in Wisconsin. We only have about a minute, Murr.
Oh, hello. Thank you. Good afternoon, Richard and Don Adbo. Long time no hear much from you, but I just wanted to say Plessy, they purposely picked because his name, Homer Adolf Plessy, he was 7/8 Caucasian, so to add to the confusion, right? So they set him up to do that. But we know this is a long-term plan of these civil lawyers that you mentioned, you know, to pit us against each other and breed us out of existence.
Don Adbo, would you like to make a final comment with the last minute?
Yeah, well said. Well said. I hope I've shed some light on this. This is not an easy subject. It's a lot of lawyer talk and a lot of lawyer stuff, and that's pretty dry, pretty hard for a lot of people to listen to. But I would really suggest that your audience download these decisions, the Brown decision and Lindmark, and read them, and the Green decision. Read these decisions, and you'll get a better understanding of how evil this whole thing really is.
I hope to do this again, sir. Thank you for your time.
Sure.
And folks, please support Republic Broadcasting Network. Go to the donate page at republicbroadcasting.org. We are in a tight spot, and we really could use your help right now so that we will speak again soon. Transcend the construct. Regards.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3dbunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3dbunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3dbunkers.com for more details or visit 3dbunkers.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.